Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on sleep aids when we come back. You know, in real estate transactions, we follow these three rules: location, location, and location. Well, in criminal law, we follow three rules also when we talk to the police or government agents, and that is, don't say anything, keep your mouth shut, and then shut up. Knowing what to say and when to say it and what not to say and who not to say it to is summed up in this maxim of law, and that is, all of the evidence that's ever going to be used against you is going to be furnished by you. And that's why judges, in their opinions, make short, terse statements like these. Listen to this first judge. He said, who would believe the ironic truth that the cooperative taxpayer fares much worse than the individual who relies upon his constitutional rights? That comes from a case called U.S. versus Dickerson. Now, I know if I said something like that, I'd be accused of being a tax protester. Listen to the second judge. You can and you must keep your mouth shut for protection under the Fifth Amendment. He said that in Belknap versus United States. If I said something like that, I'd be accused of obstructing justice or something. Listen to this third judge. He said, the constitutional privilege was intended to shield the guilty and the imprudent as well as the innocent and the farsighted. He said that in Marchetti versus United States. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, call us here at the law school. The number's 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, educational, informative, and free. Courtroom strategy and procedure, our school is available on compact disc for adult home education. It's not free. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email. Send us an email request for your free general law CD package. That's the place to start. Do it right now before you forget. Hey, listen, I reported to you on antibiotics, and I picked up another article over here. It's a pretty long article on sleep aids, sleeping pills. They're advertised every night on the 6 o'clock news. You watch Katie Couric or Brian Williams, you know, the two big drug hustlers or hucksters. You know, they sell drugs. Pay attention to the ads on the CBS Evening News, and they're selling drugs. And one of the drugs that they're selling are sleeping pills. I got to wondering about those sleeping pills, and I said, well, go get me an article on them over here. Sleeping pill usage is associated with increased mortality. Did you know that? People who take sleeping pills often hope that sleeping pills will increase their sleep enough to make them more energetic during the day, and they may hope that sleeping pills will improve their long-term health. Unfortunately, nothing could be farther from the truth. Because life and death are often our primary concern, I would like to first to discuss the darkest aspect of sleeping pills. I think that taking sleeping pills is like risking suicide. And later I will discuss how sleeping pills fail to help us during the day. Now, sleeping pills and the usage of sleeping pills is associated with increased mortality. And it's now more than 26 years that I have been working to assess the risks of sleeping pills, and I have learned that sleeping pills are associated with significantly increased mortality. This means that people who take sleeping pills die sooner than people who do not use sleeping pills. Now, I first became interested when I saw the work of Dr. E. Kyler Hammond at the American Cancer Society. Hammond was a leader of the cancer prevention study, and their work had shown that people who reported long sleep had higher mortality, as well as, to a lesser extent, those with very short sleep. To understand further what this might mean, I went to visit the American Cancer Society, starting a collaboration with which has extended over all of these many years. In the CPSI, this was the first of two large studies. In 1959 and 1960, the American Cancer Society asked its volunteers to give health questionnaires to participants whom the volunteers would be able to contact 6 years later. Now, because Cancer Society volunteers selected relatives and people whom they knew well, these volunteers accomplished the remarkable feat of collecting questionnaires from over 1 million Americans and then determining 6 years later in over 98% whether the participants had survived. As most people know, the main finding of this study was that people who smoked cigarettes had much higher rates of mortality from lung cancer and heart disease. Well, this study had also asked about many other aspects of people's health which might cause cancer. included were simple questions about reported insomnia, hours of sleep, and the use of sleeping pills. Well, in 1964, Dr. Hammond had reported that participants in the CPSI who said that they slept more than 7 hours or less than 7 hours had higher mortality than those who slept 7 hours. So I wondered if this could be related to sleeping pills and worked with Dr. Hammond and Mr. Lawrence Garfinkel of the American Cancer Society to examine which CPSI participants had died after 6 years. And we found that 50% more of those who said that they often took sleeping pills had died compared to participants of the same sex, same age, and reported health status who never took sleeping pills. Now, this increased risk for those who reported taking sleeping pills was not influenced by how long the participants reported sleeping. Whether or not the participants reported insomnia did not explain the risk. And incidentally, one-third of those who said that they often took sleeping pills also said that they never had insomnia, a matter that I will discuss below. So we found that reported insomnia did not predict mortality independent of sleep duration. For example, people who reported sleeping 7 hours who said that they frequently had insomnia had similar mortality to people who said that they slept 7 hours and that they had no insomnia. A finding in this study, and many others, was that people who complained of insomnia often reported sleeping as long or longer than people who reported no insomnia complaint. Similar paradoxes are found when sleep is measured with the EEG, brain wave recordings. Although people who complain of insomnia do sleep a bit less on average than people who report no insomnia, insomnia complaints are not closely related to sleeping less than average. In fact, people who sleep more than 8 hours a night report more insomnia than those who say they sleep 7 to 8 hours a night. There were several limitations in the early CPSI study. The questionnaire had not asked the participants whether the sleeping pills they took were what we call prescription hypnotics, or whether they might be tranquilizers, antidepressants, or over-the-counter drugs of various kinds. Prescription hypnotics are those drugs which the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has approved for treatment to promote sleep. Because of computer limitations, there was only a very limited way that we could control the comparison of sleeping pill users with non-users for other health factors which might cause death. Finally, by the time our study was published, people had largely switched from the barbiturates prescription sleeping pills, which were well known to cause thousands of overdose deaths each year, to other sleeping pills, such as Dalmane, which were thought to be much safer in overdoses. Now, to re-examine these risks, the American Cancer Society agreed to ask new questions about sleeping pills in particular in a new study called the Cancer Prevention Study 2, or the CPS 2. In 1982, American Cancer Society volunteers gave health questionnaires to 1.1 million new participants, and the survival of these people was ascertained in 1988. Many years were needed for the final data for this huge number of people to be entered into computers, assembled into computer tapes, and then loaned to us by the American Cancer Society. Additional years were needed before the new Pentium computers became available to us so that we could analyze this enormous amount of information. Even a Pentium needed literally months of constant work to complete all of these analyses. In the new study, we again found that people who said that they used sleeping pills had significantly higher mortality. Now, in this study, we had indicated that we were interested mainly in prescription sleeping pills as distinct from tranquilizers or over-the-counter drugs, because a reported frequency like often may be inexact. We had asked participants to estimate the number of sleeping pills which they took each month. When people were matched for age, sex, race, and education, and a total of 32 health risk factors, those who reported taking sleeping pills 30 or more times per month had 25% more mortality than those who said that they did not. However, we did not determine which particular sleeping pills were associated with this risk. The smaller risk of taking sleeping pills just a few times per month was 10 to 15% increased mortality compared to those who took no sleeping pills whatsoever. Sleeping pills appeared to be unsafe in any amount. Let me underline that. Sleeping pills appeared unsafe in any amount. That was the shocker that I got from this report. 25% increased mortality among those taking sleeping pills nightly, and 10 to 15% increased mortality among those taking sleeping pills occasionally. Now, did anybody tell you that when you were watching Katie or Brian? Do they say when they're advertising this sleep aid that you may need, or they claim you may need, that your chances of dying from this drug are increased by 10, 15, or 25%? Again, let me point this out. Among people who take sleeping pills, one a night, 30 per month, the mortality among all age groups is 25% higher than the national average. Now, go figure, huh? Now, right away, that says to me that, hey, listen, this thing isn't safe. Now, they advertise these drugs on the air like, you know, they're just kind of normal, everyday garden variety products, you know, kind of like buying Coca-Cola. Now, Coca-Cola isn't all that benign either. But, you know, if you were to suck a Coke one a day, every day, for 30 days, that'd be 365 Cokes a year. Now, your body can only digest, can only assimilate, can only dispose of about 3 teaspoons of refined sugar a day. I don't know how much it can do of the compound compound carbohydrate type sugars. I suspect it's many times greater than that, but the numbers that I've seen here, three teaspoons a day. Well, a Coke has 9 teaspoons. 9. I don't think anybody would say drinking one Coke a day, every day, 365 days a year is healthful and nutritious. Then what in the hell would make us think that taking a sleeping pill every day, 365 days a year, would be any more healthful than drinking Coke? But, you know, until I saw this report, I hadn't really put any numbers together. I never thought much about it one way or another. I assumed that they were probably benign and probably harmless. Come to find out, they're anything but harmless. There's more to the report. To provide a perspective on this mortality risk, we noted that the risk of taking sleeping pills 30 or more times per month was not much less than the risk of smoking one pack of cigarettes a day when the analysis were done in a similar manner. Okay. Taking one sleeping pill per day is the equivalent to, in longevity now, or in cancer mortality, it's the equivalent of smoking a pack of cigarettes a day. Now, if Katie Couric were anchoring the 6 o'clock news and said, we would like to prescribe for your health, safety, and benefit one pack of Camel Studs a day, what would you think of that? Would you think that she'd lost her mind? Would you think that anybody who recommended that you smoke a pack of cigarettes a day had your best or your good health in mind? Well, I sure as hell wouldn't. And I don't think anybody else, less or short of brain dead, would come to such a conclusion. It gets better. Now, if the association of increased mortality with sleeping pills represents sleeping pill-caused deaths, then usage of sleeping pills may have shortened the lives of the people taking sleeping pills nightly by several years. Note that word if. Note that if in this statement is important. The fact that usage of sleeping pills was associated with deaths does not prove that the sleeping pills were the cause of the death, since possibly other factors, such as a painful cancer, might both cause people to die early and to use sleeping pills without the sleeping pills having any relationship to the mechanism of death. With the new computers in the CPS-2, we were able to examine in much more detail than in CPS-1 whether the risk of using sleeping pills could be explained by any other factors. So, with these methods, we controlled for 32 different questionnaire responses which might have been related to sleeping pill use, for example, whether the participants said they had heart disease or cancer. In these cases, if people use sleeping pills because they had cancer, and it is the cancer, not the sleeping pills, which ultimately caused their increased mortality, then the control method would remove overestimation of mortality, which might not be due to sleeping pills, but might rather be due to the cancer. Now, on the other hand, if sleeping pills or cigarettes cause heart disease, which in turn leads to deaths, controlling for heart disease would cause underestimation of the mortality, which sleeping pills or cigarettes actually cause. So even with as much control for other factors as we thought possible in the study, the association of sleeping pill usage with increased mortality could not be explained by chance or by other factors which we measure. This supports the likelihood that the association is causal. All right, so let's underline association as causal. Sleeping pill and sleeping pill usage causes increased mortality independent from cancer, heart disease, and other ailments that you may be suffering from. How do you like that? How many people take sleeping pills? I don't know. Now, I remember that Marilyn Monroe, if you can remember this, died of a sleeping pill overdose. It used to be pretty common. When I was a kid, you know, you'd pick up the paper. We used to have newspapers instead of television in those days. You'd pick up the paper, and invariably, you'd read a story in there about somebody who had committed suicide by using what they called barbiturates. We thought it was pretty common, pretty neat way to commit suicide. You know, just go to sleep and never wake up. Now, how many people were murdered by use of barbiturates? You know, how many people, you know, they put an overdose into somebody else's drink and they drank it and then died and then thought, well, it was an overdose of barbiturates. Or, you know, I can't ever remember anybody ever saying, gee, the use of sleeping pills causes a shorter lifespan. You know, we heard that with cigarettes. You know, if you smoke, we used to call them coffin nails. You know, you hand somebody, you know, you light up a cigarette. And so to be sociable, you know, you would offer somebody a cigarette. And sometimes we would say, would you like to have a coffin nail? Coffin nail. That's what we called cigarettes. Now, we knew back in the 1960s that cigarettes were associated with lung cancer, that they were associated with sickness and disease and all kinds of negative results that came from the use of cigarettes. We knew that. I have never heard anybody say that sleeping pills has a negative consequence to your health. This is the first and only report I've ever seen that put this story together. One cause of death was especially increased. Among men who took sleeping pills 30 times a month had 7 times the risk of suicide. All right, I'm going to put an arrow right there by that line. Now, we have associated sleeping pills with suicide for many, many years, you know, at least all my lifetime. Now, is it because the sleeping pills cause you to become depressed and cause you to want to commit suicide that we find that people who use sleeping pills have 7 times the suicide rate of other people who do not use sleeping pills? Think about that for a second. Could it be like Ritalin? You give children Ritalin, and it increases their suicide rate. You give somebody a specific drug, like some of these antidepressants. I can't think of a name for one now, but there's a couple of big ones out there. And we associate that with increased suicide rate. Have you thought about that? How about school shootings? You take these school homicides, where some kid goes into some school and he shoots it up and he kills several people over there. In every case that I have heard of so far, those children are on one of these antidepressants. Did you know that? Did you know that? I have never seen that reported in the news. I've seen it in the underground press. I've seen reports, but I've never seen Katie Couric report that in every single case of a school shooting, the children were on antidepressants. Like that famous shooting out there in Colorado where these two kids, two teenagers, who I think committed suicide at the time, they killed all these other students. Not only are sleeping pills, but these antidepressants. Now notice that they lump these antidepressants along with sleeping pills. But they took the antidepressants out and they said, well, let's just take a look at the sleeping pills. And that's what they're doing here in the study. Now that's pretty revelatory. I haven't heard Katie report that. I guess it's because it's kind of like milk. Down in Florida some years back, there was a couple of reporters, and they wanted to do a story on milk. And it was a derogatory story on milk, and so the Mid-America Dairy Association sent a letter down here to the TV station and said, if you put that on the air, we are going to shut off your advertising revenue. Same thing happened to CBS. When 60 Minutes, Mike Wallace on 60 Minutes was going to do a report on the tobacco industry. And the tobacco industry, this is many years ago now, when they were still advertising on CBS, said, you do that, and we're going to jerk our advertising, and CBS did not put the report on. Now that shows you how powerful that the American business community has over advertising and news. Now let's just get realistic. Because the tobacco industry spends millions of dollars, maybe even billions of dollars, advertising. Same thing with Coca-Cola. Do you think that if CBS 60 Minutes put on a documentary expose of the health risks of Coca-Cola, do you think the Coca-Cola company would continue to advertise Coke on CBS? Do you believe that? Because if you do, you're a candidate for a mental hospital. Now, let's be intelligent people. You know, business is business. And Katie Couric is in the business of selling sleeping pills. She is the instrument by which the pharmaceutical industry puts sleeping pills on the air in front of you to sell you, to persuade you to use that product. And the last thing that 60 Minutes, the last thing that Katie Couric, the last thing that CBS is going to do is to alienate Merck or Pfizer or any pharmaceutical company that wants to sell that product by the use or through the use of their TV stations. Now, that's where reality's at. And that's what happened to the Florida milk story. They did not air the Florida milk story. They fired the two reporters. Now, that's the way that game is played. So the only time that you and I are ever going to hear about a story like this report here on sleeping pills is in the underground press or in some obscure medical journal or some obscure medical report done by somebody someplace. Now, this sounds pretty serious to me. If there's a 25% increased mortality among those that take sleeping pills, and if the suicide rate is 7 times higher among those that use sleeping pills, that sounds like a god-awful big health risk. I'll confess this, I don't know how many people take sleeping pills nationwide. You got 300 million people in the society. Hell, maybe only 1% of the people in the country use sleeping pills to start with. So, you know, an increased risk among that 1 percentage point is statistically inconsequential. But I don't know that. Hell, maybe 10 or 15 or 20% of people use those sleep aids. Now, I can report I never have. I guess it's because I've never had insomnia. I'm an old farm kid, and when I get through at the end of the day, children, I'm tired. And when I'm tired and I go to bed, I go to sleep. As my old stepdad used to say, he's just real tired. Came from Pennsylvania, couldn't speak English, not like me. Now, I would say this is pretty significant news. So I don't know, you know, if you're a sleeping pill addict or you take sleep aids, you know, that's your thing in life. I don't care. No skin off my back. I'm not opposed to sleep aids. I'm not opposed to barbiturates. I'm not opposed to the drug industry. I just like to get full disclosure. What I want to know is, gee, I didn't know this. Well, now I know. Not only now I know, I wouldn't use sleeping pills now. Up until this report, I thought, well, they're probably all right. Probably for somebody who's suffering from, you know, some kind of a disease or something, you know, maybe sleeping pills might help the guy. But now I've changed my opinion. Hey, listen, this is the midpoint in the program. I've got to give you a reminder here, so bear with me as I remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet, and we're heard worldwide daily. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, call the Law School Director, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct, to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend will necessarily reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at area code 417-273-4967. Tonight's report is on sleep aids, sleeping pills, however you want to word it. I'm going to write that down, sleep aids. Now, this report came from the Internet. It's written by Dr. Daniel F. Kripke, M.D., K-R-I-P-K-E. K-R-I-P-K-E-M-D. Dr. Kripke. And I don't have any other information on it. However, I think that if you were to go to Google and punch in Daniel F. Kripke, K-R-I-P-K-E, if you want to do a search, it's entitled, This Little Book Explains Risks of Sleeping Pills. And see, I've got sleeping pills in impairment. And he's got a couple of little thingies up here, little cartoons, called Impairment Death. Wished I'd ask him, you know, where did you get this, Dirk? punch in Dr. Kripke up here, put in sleeping pills or sleeping aids. See what you come up with here. If you can come up with that name, Kripke, you'll probably get this report right here. How many pages is this thing? I'll give you another little clue. 29 pages. 29-page report. Why haven't you heard this opinion of sleeping pills from every expert? Well, the idea that sleeping pills have a dark side is nothing new. Indeed, generations of physicians have shared my opinion based on their own clinical experience. Probably the majority today agree they are a silent majority with little to be gained by making their opinions public. All right, let's pause for a moment. How much money do we get paid by telling you about sleeping pills causing disease, causing mortality, or causing suicide? We don't get paid anything. You don't get paid by reporting the negative effects of sleeping pills. How much money is made by the pharmaceutical industry or Katie Couric or CBS by advertising and selling sleeping aids? Well, it's something. It's probably in the millions of dollars. I don't know if it's a $1 billion-a-year industry or more, but it's money. Katie Couric and CBS are not advertising. The pharmaceutical companies are not advertising and buying advertising space on the CBS Evening News because they're losing money or they're doing this as a public service. They're doing it because it's a profit-making business. There's money to be made. We make the product. We've got it licensed. We've got it approved by the FDA, and we want to sell it to you. So the pharmaceutical industry and the news media and the television media have great reason to want to sell you sleeping pills, and the researchers who have researched and found out that it kills you and makes you seven times likely or more likely to commit suicide get paid nothing. That's why you're not hearing anything about it. There isn't any incentive in it. Now, the sleeping pill industry has $1 billion of yearly sales. So that says here, now they answered my question, $1 billion a year. That's $1,000 million of annual sales, and it has thought of many subtle ways of keeping its product popular. To be frank, the manufacturers of sleeping pills have often given the leaders of sleep research large monetary grants to test their products. These colleagues are very nice people who are not the sort to bite the hand which feeds them. Some of the most prominent leaders of sleep research have been supported mainly by drug company grants. Well, no, that's very interesting. Some of the most prominent leaders of sleep research have been supported mainly by drug company grants. The drug companies have used many subtle free offers and not so subtle methods of influencing the wider group of sleep clinicians to mute their critical attitude towards sleeping pills. Okay. Well, that makes all the sense in the world. I mean, if I was selling this product, I would want my critics to mute their criticism of my product. And so I might be willing to go to my critics and fund their pet projects with my money to get them to shut up about my product so that I could sell my product without their constant carping and criticizing. That makes good sense. That's good business. For example, a few years ago, manufacturers offered free chocolate cream pie at a national sleep meeting for attendees to watch a bizarre comic session in which leaders of the sleep community mocked the Food and Drug Administration for its efforts to regulate sleeping pills. I suppose a good deal of money was spent for those free chocolate cream pies and the advertising of that clowning. In several years, the National Sleep Foundation has launched a yearly publicity campaign about the dangers of insomnia, encouraging everybody to sleep for 8 hours a day. Scientific evidence to support 8 hours sleep is non-existent. For example, people live longer who sleep less than 8 hours a day. See our above chart. Could this campaign be influenced by the fact that much of its money comes from the sleeping pill manufacturers? Could it? The public relations firm for Ambien bragged that National Sleep Foundation publicity was effective in increasing sleeping pill sales. Well, if I was a drug manufacturer, I'd be happy to give more money to this organization because the National Sleep Foundation is helping me sell more sleeping pills. Conversely, if I could get the National Sleep Foundation to help me sell more schools, I would be happy to donate more money to the National Sleep Foundation, wouldn't you? Unfortunately, nobody advertises for behavioral treatments or for hypnotic abstinence. The advertising for light treatment is minuscule compared to pharmaceutical advertising. Now, there's need for hypnotics research. Today, people can be certain that any of the prescription sleeping pill is safe for long-term use, or even that they help sleep with long-term use. Although the potential risk of intermittent use, that is a few times a month, seems to be less than the risk of nightly use, our CPSI and CPS2 studies indicated that sleeping pills may be unsafe in any amount. Oh my God, that sounds like Ralph Nader, you know, with the automobile unsafe at any speed. Unsafe in any amount. No, no, I'm not. It is important to recognize that both studies were done before some of the drugs popular today came on the market, in particular Zolpidem and Zaleplon, the most popular U.S. sleeping pills as we begin the 21st century. They were not tested. Different experts may have different opinions about the likelihood of long-term safety, but the fact is that nobody knows for sure about any particular drug, and the only way to assure public safety is to do long-term randomized trials. Long-term randomized trials. I'm going to underline that. It isn't unique. It is not a unique idea that long-term studies should be done. The National Institutes of Health, the NIH, are doing long-term studies of diet and exercise, hormone replacement and vitamins, cholesterol-lowering drugs, and aspirin. Of the psychoactive drugs, long-term studies have been supported for antidepressant and antipsychotic drugs. Those are called mood stabilizers, such as lithium, tranquilizers, narcotic agonists and antagonists, and stimulants for treatment of hyperactive kids. That's that ADHD, Ritalin. Truthfully, hypnotics are the only class of psychotropic drugs for which long-term studies have not been supported by the NIH. In a 1997 search of the CRISP LISP of NIH-supported projects, I found about 140 clinical studies of other psychotropic drugs, but none on sleeping pills. This is neglectful considering the proportion of total psychotropic drug sales which the sleeping pill market occupies. Sleeping pill market occupies the lion's share of the market. Now, although I have received generous grant funding in other areas of sleep research, the federal agencies have never been willing to support any studies of sleeping pills which I have proposed. Now, I do not take it personally, since I know other investigators have the same problem. There is a mindset against funding studies of sleeping pills and a lot of passing of the buck to different NIH institutes. You could count on one hand and have fingers left over the total number of clinical trials of hypnotic drugs funded by the National Institutes of Health in its entire 50-year history. Now, did you get that? You could count on one hand and have a bunch of fingers left over the total number of clinical trials of these hypnotic drugs funded by the NIH. Now, there's no better way to defang or to neutralize an opponent than to infiltrate his organization. Let me tell you a little story here. One time out in Berkeley, California, there was a group back in the Vietnam War era of anti-war demonstrators. I think, if I remember right, there was 130-odd members of this group. The California Highway Patrol sent an agent over with money in his pocket and offered them money and asked to join. Well, naturally, if you're an organization, somebody knocks on your door and says, I've got money to donate and I want to join your organization. Do you stop and say, gee, are you an undercover investigator for the California Highway Patrol? So they took the money, brought the guy in, and ultimately made him an officer in the group, voted him in as treasurer or secretary or something. So here they have a California Highway Patrol. In fact, as I recall, they had two of them in there, two undercover agents. Now, these two agents become agent provocateurs, and they start proposing to the other members that they do something to get newspaper headlines. So they suggested that they explode some dynamite. Where? Out on the mud flats of San Francisco Bay. So when you're driving down Highway 17, you know, used to be the old Nimitz Freeway. Next time, as you're going by Berkeley, you look off there to the right. Now, it's full of condominiums and buildings out there now, but in those days, it was just mud flats. You know, just mud flats. And so the two members, they out of 130-some-odd members, they got two to agree. And the two highway patrolmen furnished the dynamite and got all the stuff together. Is this called entrapment, boys and girls? Entrapment. And so these two guys go out and they blow up some sticks of dynamite harmlessly out here on the mudflats. Now, a day or two later, a week or so later, a miraculous raid occurs of guess where? These two guys' apartment, and in their garage they find what? Dynamite! Isn't that just special? So naturally, they arrest these two guys. Now, the two highway patrolmen, they're not involved in the explosions. They're long, you know, far, far away. They're not involved in any of this. Now, see, these kinds of reports, you know, come out years and years later. This was used by the California Highway Patrol for the express purpose of destroying this anti-war group. And it worked like a shot. They started prosecuting these members. They charged the whole group with conspiracy. And some of these people were college professors, and some of them, you know, were... And this is part of that Nixon outfit. See, remember the Nixon people, you know, they called in the IRS to investigate people? Remember that? President Nixon, he had an enemies list. And so if you were a political enemy, you're a Democrat, you know, you're a communist, you're some other political opponent, you're opposed to the war, Nixon would call the IRS and say, hey, go audit Senator so-and-so, go audit Representative such-and-such, go audit these guys. And so here's the IRS commissioner, appointed by who? President Nixon. And so he orders audits of us. Not me, I don't know, I've been audited three times, but I don't know that Nixon audited. But, you know, I'm just using that as a vernacular to say, you know, they're using government agents and agencies and taxpayer dollars to harass us because we're opposed to the war in Iraq or we're opposed to the war in Vietnam. And in many cases, these are the agent provocateurs. So just tuck it away in your heart. Now, there's no better way to control your opponents, like the National Health Institute, NIH, than for the pharmaceutical industry to go over to the NIH and say, gee, can we donate money? Can we join the NIH? And they don't have any interest in your health or mine or anybody else's. They just have in mind, let's control this research organization and make sure that whatever they're investigating, they're not investigating us. They're not investigating what we're doing. So they infiltrate what they do. So the government does that, and business does that. Walmart does that. Hell, any big business does that in their own self-interest. Makes all the sense in the world. General Motors, you know, ought to infiltrate Ralph Nader, you know, and that's what happened to oil companies, you know. They infiltrated and took over. All of the environmental groups are dominated by big oil. Exxon, the biggest single contributor to I'll think of their name here in a minute. There's this big outfit, you know, big, always advertising about environmental. Well, Atlantic Richfield is the biggest single contributor to this organization, one of these greeny organizations. Hell, that makes all the sense in the world, you know, for Atlantic Richfield to do that. But don't believe for a moment that because you listen to some propaganda on the 6 o'clock news that it's necessarily good for you. Now, this report here is totally negative to sleeping pills. I don't care one way or the other. I don't take them. I'm not for them or against them. I'm a reporter. I just report facts. And it was a shock to me when Dirk came in. He said, my God, you got to read this report. I said, what's it about? And he said, it's about sleeping pills. I said, sleeping pills? What in the hell could be newsworthy about sleeping pills, for crying out loud? He said, read this report. It'll blow your socks off. If you take sleeping pills, boys and girls, one a day, like drinking one Coke a day, 365 days a year, I don't know if you'd be called a sleeping pill addict any more than you'd be called a Coke addict, but you're 7 times more likely to commit suicide, and you're 25% more likely to die prematurely if you're one of those that take sleeping pills. And it's equated in this report to smoking one pack of cigarettes a day. I've already said nobody in his right mind would recommend for your health that you smoke a pack of cigarettes a day, but Katie Couric is recommending that you take a sleeping pill every day. And of course, now she's going to say, well, I never recommended that you take a sleeping pill every single day, just once in a while. Okay, well, in that case, well, then it's 10 to 15% increased mortality among those taking sleeping pills occasionally. So Katie Couric is recommending that you take sleeping pills occasionally, which is what the advertisement says, by the way, for occasional need. Say, but that increases your risk of mortality by 10 to 15%. So Katie Couric is just recommending that you die 10 to 15% of the time rather than 25% of the time. Is that what we're listening to here? Now, to summarize our new CPS2 results, in a second million participants confirmed that sleeping pill use is associated with excess mortality. It's probably impossible to design an epidemiological study which would prove that sleeping pills cause the extra mortality associated with their use. The only way to be certain if the sleeping pills are directly causing the risk would be to randomly offer volunteers either sleeping pills or placebo pills for long-term trials. And it's true that such studies would be quite hard to do and expensive, and that ethical concerns would have to be overcome. Nevertheless, people whose loved ones take sleeping pills have an urgent need to know if these pills are safe, which we will not know until random clinical trials are done, which are never going to be done. Until studies give us more clarity, my best guess is that taking sleeping pills shorten people's lives by increasing the risk of suicide and other causes of death. This is why I say that taking sleeping pills for a percentage of people may amount to doctor-assisted suicide. Doctor-assisted suicide. God kind of reminds you of Dr. Death, doesn't it? Now remember that the doctor who's recommending or who is going to give you this prescription, and in fact some of these sleep aids that are being advertised, I think are over-the-counter. Now maybe they are, maybe they aren't. I'll have to watch Katie tonight and see, well, now is Ambien over-the-counter or is that a prescription drug? In any event, if you go to your doctor and you say, Doc, oh my God, I can't sleep at night. What am I going to do? Well, you could take Ambien and I'll write you a prescription. And after all, that's what doctors are there for, to solve your problems. And so you get this prescription and you go out and you use it up. And you come back and say, Doc, those pills, they work really great. But when I don't take them, I can't sleep. And when I do take them, I do sleep real good. So would you give me another prescription? And then you can get like Rush Limbaugh. If you can't get your doctor to give you this prescription, you go out and you solicit five or six doctors so that you've got five or six physicians. And then when you need a prescription and this doctor over here, he won't prescribe it anymore. You just go to one of these other doctors over here and you get him to prescribe it for you. Now, isn't that just real special? All right, I thought you'd want to know about sleep aids. Not a big deal in life, but, you know, it's a deal in life. All right, now you know. Now, let me give you a final reminder that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, would you please go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.